Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. We're going to begin this hour by speaking with George Weigel. Again, no stranger to this program, friend of Ave Maria Radio, Al Cresta, and my own acquaintance. And he's a brilliant author. His intelligence is only matched by his articulate wit. And he authored this new book published by Ignatius Press, entitled Pomp, Circumstance, and Unsolicited Advice, Commencement Addresses and University Lectures. Now, it's a commentary on the moral decline we're facing today in the modern university and how there is a pathway forward. And the pathway forward is really a looking back to the genesis of universities. The Catholic Church is the institution that we owe the debt of gratitude for the sake of universities. The Church invented what we now know as the university. In fact, the name university comes from the Latin universitas. It is an appeal to the unicity of all sciences under the aspect of the queen of the sciences, theology, and then secondarily, philosophy as the handmaiden of theology. So therefore, you've got all the sciences at their varying levels of participation in the natural, the material, into the immaterial, ultimately culminating with the application and the bearing of reason in philosophy and the heights of philosophy in natural theology. We call that metaphysics. If you ever hear that term, it is an appeal to the fact that with reason, we can come to know the highest things, i.e. that God is, and that God has in the natural order revealed certain things about his reality to us. But theology, the science of divine revelation in system, in thought, in pedagogy, is made available to us by means of the gift of revelation so that we can contemplate the highest things, God, and all things under the aspect of God, ultimately for our own salvation. That's what the university is for. Now, we go on from there to speak with Benjamin O'Brien. As a first responder, he shares his testimony and his faith journey as a former fireman. All this after the headlines.
Thank you, Marcus, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, June 5th. It's the Feast of St. Boniface. And today's news is brought to you by Ave Maria University. Your vocation location is at avemaria.edu. A former Alaska priest is missing after being kidnapped by a terrorist group in Nigeria. The Catholic Diocese of Fairbanks, Alaska, says Nigerian officials alerted them this week that former Reverend Alfonso Alfina was taken captive by the jihadist militant group Boko Haram. Afina was performing missionary work in Nigeria when he was kidnapped. The diocese held a mass on Sunday to pray for Afina's safety. Afina spent over 6 years serving in Alaska. Travelers from a dozen countries are being banned by President Trump over security risks. The list includes Afghanistan, Iran, Haiti, Somalia, and Sudan. People from 7 countries will have partial restrictions, including Cuba and Venezuela. The man accused of injuring 15 people in a fire attack at a pro-Israel protest in Colorado is due in court today. Mohammed Sabri Solomon will appear in a Boulder courtroom at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. Solomon allegedly used a makeshift flamethrower and Molotov cocktails on a group calling for the release of Israeli hostages. Antarctic seaweed is shattering records in overwhelming beaches around the Caribbean. Last month, the seaweed grew to over 37 million tons, and the amount of seaweed is expected to grow even more this month. Issues start when the seaweed washes ashore. rots and emits hydrogen sulfate, which smells like rotten eggs and can cause breathing problems with people with sensitivities. Smaller amounts also appear in the Florida Keys, southern Florida beaches, the Mississippi Delta, and the Texas coast. From the Ave Maria Radio.net news desk, I'm Dan McGraw.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. The Catholic Church invented what we know as the university, including the cultural tradition of free and open debate on disputed questions. Catholic colleges and universities thus stand poised to help reform institutions of higher learning at a moment of crisis in academic life throughout the world. Joining us to have this conversation pertaining to the content of his new book, Pomp, Circumstance, and Unsolicited Advice, published by Ignatius Press, is George Weigel, Distinguished Senior Fellow of Washington's Ethics and Public Policy Center. He's also a prolific author of numerous books. George, great to speak with you again. How are you?
Marcus, fine. I'm back from a very busy month in Rome, and I've been a few days in Toronto. So I'm not exactly sure where I am at any given moment, but I think I'm back in my office right now. Good to talk to you.
Likewise, George. And I have to ask you, what were you doing in Rome? What was going on?
You obviously were not watching NBC, Marcus, where I was doing a lot of good, if I may say, catechetics.
I'm really glad.
Over a month. It was a very intense, intense month, and we're looking forward to the future with hope here.
Yeah. In fact, I've been following your work and some of the thoughts that you've shared about where we are and where we're going. And so there's quite a lot to be done for Pope Leo to continue to respond to the issues of our time. But he's been doing so much in the short amount of time that he has been Pope. And one of the issues that we're facing, you've penned a book on, which is the decline of higher education, generally in the world, but particularly here in the United States. There's been a real decay of the unicity of thought in its height at institutions of higher learning. So I want to invite you, George, to frame the question in all of your years of being a public commentator.
I wouldn't give Europe a pass on this, mm-hmm. Marcus. I recently reviewed a fine book by the Regius Professor Emeritus of Moral and Pastoral Theology at Oxford, Nigel Bigger.
Mm-hmm.
The book was called Colonialism, A Moral Reckoning. And I reviewed it in the British journal Studies in Christian Ethics because not a single reviewer could be found in Britain to review that book.
Wow.
Which had caused an enormous fuss because it's a balanced assessment of a complex phenomenon and not, you know, woke race baiting. So, you know, things, are just as ugly, in places like Oxford and Cambridge as they are at Harvard and Columbia and Princeton and all the rest. The root of all of this, I think, I identified in the preface to this book, and that is what was said by the former president of Harvard, Drew Faust, at her inauguration, that truth is not a possession, it's an aspiration.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a fancy way of saying there's your truth and my truth, but nothing called the truth.
Right, right.
Well, we know where that leads, and, you know, one hopes that eventually Harvard will figure that out. But this is at the root of the decay of higher education and its transformation into training camps for little overprivileged monsters of the sort we have seen demonstrating at Columbia last year. I think I put this in the preface too. I mean, the high point of that was this woman who was helping them, these crazy kids, identify or occupy a building illegally. And then she was sending out tweets demanding that they be sent yogurt and bottled water.
Mm-hmm.
And I have actually in the end notes to this book. This is a woman named Johanna King Slutsky. As I say, a name beyond the talented parody of Charles Dickens or P.G. Woodhouse. And she's back teaching the required Western Civ course at Columbia. But here is her précis of her doctoral dissertation. Mm-hmm. My dissertation is on fantasies of limitless energy in the transatlantic romantic imagination from 1760 to 1860. My goal is to write a prehistory of metabolic rift, Marx's term for the disruption of energy circuits caused by industrialization under capitalism. I am particularly interested in theories of the imagination and poetry as interpreted through a Marxian lens in order to update and propose an alternative to historicist ideological critiques of the romantic imagination. Now, that is nothing but rubbish.
Yes.
And that would be accepted as the theme of a doctoral dissertation.
Mm-hmm.
At one of the oldest universities in America, which used to be called King's, right, before the American Revolution,
mm-hmm.
Is simply appalling. So I thought it would be a good idea to put together a selection of my commencement addresses at sane universities, which are invariably Catholic,
yeah.
And another selection of lectures in university environments, saner university environments, that touch on these questions of faith and reason.
And thank you for doing that. And the fact is, you unite all of your thoughts under the reality that, firstly, universities are founded from the mind of the Catholic Church, and therefore the pursuit of higher education owes itself the moral obligation of studying all things under the aspect of being created by the Creator God. Now, that sentence I just uttered is virtually unthinkable in the secular sphere today, especially when you think about higher education.
Yeah, it's it's summarized. Let's go back to Harvard again. The, mm-hmm. the Harvard Great Seal used to say, Veritas Christo et Ecclesia, truth for Christ and the Church. In the late 19th century, they took away Christo et Ecclesia.
Mm-hmm.
So it just says Veritas. And my dear friend, Father Richard John Newhouse, used to wonder when they were going to put a question mark at the end of Veritas. Truth, question mark. You know, let's go to the full Pontius Pilate here and
quit asked.
And admit that we don't think there is anything properly called the truth,
right,
except, you know, propositions like 2 plus 2 always equals 4 in the base 10 system. This is a real problem, and of course it's infected the religious studies and theology at these highly secularized universities as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Harvard Divinity School is simply a factory of pious wokery right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Yale Divinity School, which used to be a very serious place, with people on the faculty like George Lindbeck, is in a similarly sad condition. So I think it is going to be up to Catholic universities, Catholic colleges, to model, to provide the template for a reform of higher education, which begins with the conviction that there are, as you said a moment ago, there are truths built into the world and into us which we can know by an exercise of reason. Now, believers would say that exercise of reason is amplified by the truths we know from divine revelation.
Mm-hmm.
That's why John Paul II, in the encyclical Fides et Ratio, Faith and Reason, said that faith and reason are like two wings on which the human spirit rises to the contemplation of the truth. We can discuss that more after the break here.
We are continuing this conversation with George Weigel, Distinguished Senior Fellow of Washington's Ethics and Public Policy Center, and This is pertaining to the content of his latest book, Pomp, Circumstance, and Unsolicited Advice, addresses and lectures that he's delivered in universities across the country. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria, Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mark Speech. I'm speaking with George Weigel, Distinguished Senior Fellow of Washington's Ethics and Public Policy Center. We're talking about his most recent book, Pomp, Circumstance, and Unsolicited Advice, published by Ignatius Press. So, George, we had just left off about, well, I guess essentially you were continuing to show us how these major universities that had been established under the auspices of Catholicism or at the lowest level, a kind of Protestant Christianity, and still have deviated so far from even a notion of objectivity and truth and morality.
Yeah, it's one of the things we're seeing here, Marcus, is the final death throes of the Protestant establishment in America, out of which these so-called elite universities grew. Many of them were founded, like Harvard, as training schools for Protestant ministers, and gradually expanded into full universities. But once you lose that tether between faith and reason, you begin to question reason. Why? Well, because reason by itself tends to become nervous about itself.
Right.
And unless you come to these big questions of life with the conviction that the world was created through the Logos, through the Word, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and all things were created through the Word, which means that the divine reason was imprinted into the world. So there is a divine logic, if you will, built into the world. That's a foundation on which you can then trust reason. See? I mean, and without that foundation, and given the decline of you used the M word, metaphysics, the decline of metaphysics as the crown jewel of philosophy and the replacement of that by epistemology, the study of thinking, knowledge, well, that soon became thinking about thinking. And
right.
Then you're in this kind of vicious circle of self-referentiality that, among other things, the whole philosophical program of John Paul II, when he was a philosophy professor, was aimed at getting the Western world out of. Let's get out of the sandbox of thinking about thinking about thinking,
right,
and start thinking about the truth of things again.
It's frankly baffling that these so-called intellectuals won't acknowledge, they know, but they won't acknowledge that a standalone epistemology, a self-contained epistemology, is self-defeating because it winds up becoming nothing but circular argumentation.
Yeah, you would think that would get boring after a while, but evidently, you know, it's been going on for a better part of 200 years now,
mm-hmm.
so it hasn't reached the limit of academic boredom yet. What the other problem we've got here is one I was actually discussing with some people in Toronto last night at the Toronto Oratory when I was giving a talk up there. And that is that the most successful Marxist theoretician mm-hmm. of all time was the Italian Antonio Gramsci, whose idea was the revolution would come through a takeover not of the means of production, but of the means of cultural production. If you take over the universities, if you take over high culture, music, drama, film now, if you take over popular entertainment with the ideas of the revolution, then you will have seized the high ground from which you can leverage everything else. And that is exactly what has unfolded in the Western world since the 60s. Very few people believe in Marxist economics anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really have to be crack-brained to accept that.
Right.
But this Gramscian notion of the long march through the institutions mm-hmm. of culture has proven exceptionally successful. And I was telling these people in Toronto when I was doing Witness to Hope, the first volume of my John Paul II biography, I went to interview Massimo D'Alema, who had been the Prime Minister of Italy mm-hmm. At one point during John Paul II's pontificate. He was the head of what was called the Democratic Party of the Left, which was the old Italian Communist Party. And I met him at the DPL's headquarters near Piazza Venezia, and I was very struck that the bust in the hall, the sculpture in the entrance hall, not Marx, not Engels, not Lenin, but Gramsci. I mean, they knew who the guy was who had figured out how to make the revolution work. And, of course, he was an Italian, so they liked that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a very striking signal to me almost 30 years ago now. This was 1997, that Gramsci was the guy who had figured it out. And that's quite clear in what we see on many elite campuses today.
And as we're seeing this on many campuses, we are also seeing this the cultural sentiment, because universities don't exist in a vacuum. In fact, they, quite frankly, build or destroy civilizations and culture, societal culture. And so this notion of an alma mater, George, that you seem to appeal to in your speeches, this notion that you owe a kind of debt of fidelity to these sane universities, that doesn't exist for the public university, that same reverential love and awe, because we've become so mechanistic and functional and utilitarian.
This is another dimension of the broader problem. When higher education simply became a ticket to a well-paying job rather than the furnishing of a mind and the development of a human spirit, or what we might even call a soul, an ordering of the heart to noble desires rather than ignoble desires, this something really went out of the educational enterprise.
Right.
This is what Catholic universities, and there are more of them than people might suspect, who take the Catholic roots of higher education seriously do. They provide formation as well as education and technical competence. They're about educating the whole person, and that is not simply your brain and your credit card.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what happens at a number of these, at these universities that I had the privilege of giving commencement addresses at. And it does. It creates, that kind of education creates or inculcates the old Roman virtue of pietas.
Right.
Piety in the Roman sense meant a reverent respect for those on whose shoulders you stood to do whatever it is you're doing, including engaging in the life of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And if that pietas is not there, then you've simply got a factory for producing human robots mm-hmm. to do certain necessary functions in society.
George, we're out of time in this segment, but always an honor. Thank you very much for making the time. I'm glad you're back.
Thank you, Marcus. So am I. It'd be nice to sleep in my own bed. And I noticed with some distress that there was no bourbon in the duty-free at Toronto Airport today, which I think is probably a reaction to Mr. Trump's tariff policies. So, not good.
Thank you, George. My guest, George Weigel, distinguished senior fellow of Washington's Ethics and Public Policy Center, and he's the author of Pomp, Circumstance, and Unsolicited Advice. Do procure a copy from Ignatius Press. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Ann Arbor Smiles is a state-of-the-art dental practice led by the talents of doctors Dan Kennedy, Chris Marzoni, and Stephen Gray. One of their many satisfied patients is Father Deacon Lawrence Hendricks.
I was one of the first patients to receive a Sarah crown from Dr. Kennedy. The Sarah technology allows for restorations to be done in one visit. They always use the most advanced techniques in dentistry. I've always enjoyed the friendly staff and the personal relationships that I have at Ann Arbor Smiles.
Go to AnnArborSmiles.com today.
The Encounter School of Ministry is offering a power-packed four-day event allowing you to experience a taste of the School of Ministry. The Summer Intensive offers foundational teaching in the spiritual gifts, including kingdom identity, healing, prophecy, and inner healing, all drawing from the richness of our Catholic heritage and taught by Father Matthias Phelan, Patrick Rice, and more. The Encounter School of Ministry Main Campus Summer Intensive, evenings June 23rd to 26th at St. Patrick Parish in Brighton, Michigan. Visit EncounterCatholic.com to learn more. EncounterCatholic.com.
Honey, did you ever call Mighty Dog Roofing of Ann Arbor for that free roof inspection?
I knew I forgot something.
Roof leaks can cause mold buildup or even roof collapse. Protect your family today by calling local Catholics Dan and Mary Flanagan at Mighty Dog Roofing for a free inspection of your roof, siding, or windows. Mighty Dog Roofing, 734-224-4916. That's 734-224-4916.
On the next Epiphany.
Hi, Vanessa Denhagarmo here. Father Marcus Shimami from St. Thomas Chaldean Catholic Church will talk about a new Chaldean center opening up in West Bloomfield, including a library dedicated to Bishop Ibrahim. Teresa Tomio from Catholic Connection joins me to talk about the Grand Getaway on Mackinac Island this August.
Epiphany, weekdays at noon on Ave Maria Radio.
When did the tradition of confirmation begin? From the time of the first Pentecost, in order to fulfill Christ's will, the apostles administered the laying on of hands to the newly baptized. This imparts the Spirit, which completes the grace of baptism. The imposition of hands is recognized as the origin of confirmation. Very early in the church, anointing with oil, called chrism, was added to the laying on of hands. In the Eastern Church, it is called chrismation. The name Christian means anointed. calling to mind Jesus, whom the Father anointed with the Holy Spirit at his baptism in the Jordan. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
You're listening to Ave Maria Radio.
Ave Maria Radio.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes, without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. First responders are people who lay their lives on the line. They're the unsung heroes of the continued function, flourishing, and even safety of a thriving society. Joining me to have a conversation about his role in being on that front line, being part of a corps of men and women who do so, in this case, firefighters, who lay down their lives for the sake of others, is Benjamin O'Brien. He is the author of The Proving Grounds. He studied liberal arts at Our Lady Seat of Wisdom College, obtained a BA in Humanities and Philosophy from Redeemer University, and earned his fire service credentials from Algonquin College of Applied Arts and Technology. And he began firefighting in 2008 and has served in various communities as a fireman. Benjamin, thank you very much for joining us. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm well, thank you. And how are you, Dr. Peter?
I'm well, very well. And on behalf of all of our listeners, and frankly, on behalf of the rest of the United States for that matter, I want to say thank you. Thank you for your service. I understand that you and many others like you are not only the unsung heroes, but you do a job that's largely thankless. And you need to know that there are many of us out there who appreciate your sacrifice.
Well, it's my privilege, and I was in the fire service for 14 years, 6 years as a volunteer, and 8 years full-time. And then through a kind of a perfect storm of circumstances, my wife and I discerned that the lifestyle wasn't working for us, so we prayed about a change. And so in the last 2 years, I've left the fire service. I'm now working in the Diocese of Madison. I work in grounds and maintenance for a beautiful historic church here in rural Wisconsin. And it's been a wonderful lifestyle change, but I still have fond memories of my time in the fire service, and really, really respect all the brothers and sisters who work in that profession. So it's a privilege to be on the show this morning, and appreciate you having me.
Well, Benjamin, I have to say this memoir is very well written, and I understand the decision both you and your bride made of having you move to a different line of work. But reading this memoir, one comes to a real understanding of the ins and outs involved in being part of the service. And so I want to ask of you to give our listeners a kind of visual overview of what entry into life as a fireman looks like.
Certainly. Well, it was certainly not what I expected, I have to say. I was coming from the liberal arts background and wanted to follow what I felt was God's call for my life to enter emergency services. And it was a long road. You know, it's a very coveted profession, very competitive to get in. I think when I wrote the entrance exam for the city I ended up working for, there were 1,600 of us who wrote the aptitude test. They took 400 for first interviews. I ranked 97th overall, sat on a wait list for several months. Then I was called up for a second interview. I ranked 21st overall. They hired one class, didn't get down to my name. They almost scrapped that list, but there were enough retirements that fall that I got hired almost 2 years after I initially applied. So to give you some perspective about how challenging it is to actually obtain that career in the first place. But that's just really the start. And once you go through recruit training and your probationary year, it really is, you know, a trial by fire, no pun intended. But there are aspects that can be very mentally and physically challenging. And I think I would say that what was most challenging actually wasn't firefighting itself. It wasn't the emergencies. It wasn't the physical danger. Mm-hmm. It was actually station culture.
Uh-huh.
And I write about that a lot in my book. I think I really wanted the Proving Grounds to be a catalyst for discussing the role of the Catholic worker in the modern world and to give a little help and a little encouragement to other Catholic workers out there who may be in similar circumstances, who perhaps feel isolated or who are perhaps being bullied by atheist coworkers. So that was a real immersion into what we're up against as Catholics culturally. And as I wrote in my book, I made many mistakes and I had to learn the hard way. But it was an opportunity to learn some apologetics and maybe grow a little spine and learn how to stand up for one's faith.
Mm-hmm.
So it's my hope that this book can really help people.
And it's precisely in that vein that I'd like to ask of you to press a little deeper, because I think for the vast majority of us, we don't quite realize that workplace cultures of varying sorts exist in a different way for frontliners. You,
mm-hmm.
you do a service, laying down your life for the sake of others, and so you develop a kind of camaraderie with those in the service with you. But when you don't share common core beliefs about truth, about faith, about the reality of the human person and who God is, you experience struggles that very few can relate to.
Yes, I think you hit the nail on the head there by juxtaposing the need for team cohesion with the diverse values that we often bring to the table as a team. And that can be a challenge. You know, they say never discuss politics or religion mm-hmm. at work. And maybe there's a truth to that. But, you know, these are the most important topics. They're the foundation of society.
Yeah.
So, If you have grave differences and those differences are causing friction in the station, it's not like there's a switch that turns off when the alarm goes off and we go on a call. You know, those human relationships form the foundation for how you work together as a team. So it can be very challenging if you're at odds with your coworkers to learn to get along when the tones go off and there's an emergency. So for myself, I had to really navigate how much to let these issues drive a wedge between myself and my coworkers. So
mm-hmm.
I typically didn't talk about my faith a lot in the station. I had a spiritual director who warned me against that. He said, you know, let your example shine. You know, be an ethical, good worker, be a hard worker, keep your conversation clean. If someone is interested in learning about your faith, you know, by all means, speak up. But what I found was actually my coworkers brought the conversation to me
mm-hmm.
and often in ways that were quite aggressive. I mean, they said things to me I can't repeat on the air, but I think it's incumbent on us as Catholics to have answers. I think it's First Peter when he says, always be prepared to have an answer for anyone who calls you to account for the hope that is in you. And it's very true, you know, so I had to delve more deeply into apologetics and learn more about my faith and learn mm-hmm. how to answer common objections to the Catholic Church. And this was at a time when the movie Spotlight had just come out, clerical abuse scandal. So,
so
public opinion against the Catholic Church was very negative at that time. And so, my coworkers came to me with a fair amount of aggression and they were disgruntled against the Catholic Church and maybe with some reason. So I had to defend the priesthood and explain that there were good men out there and I had good experience with priests to kind of offset the cultural narrative. So all that being said, when the tones go off, when it's time for an emergency, I think my coworkers were able to kind of put those differences aside as much mm-hmm. as they could. And we tried to work together as a team. And that's so important. But then back at the station, sometimes the conversations would resume. You know, so that was my trial by fire. It wasn't so much the emergencies. It was the ideological struggles that I think were a microcosm of the ideological struggles that the church at large faces in our increasingly secular society.
Yeah, you're not wrong. In fact, I sincerely believe that when you look at high stress environments in the culture, especially in this case, first responders, because you're at the forefront of being at the service of the flourishing of the culture and even its safety, the kind of environments that are built and developed tend to be a better pulse of what's going on in the rest of the culture. In other words, looking at just reading your book and considering what the culture looks like, you get the stark realization that at least up till the 1950s, the culture in your work environment would have looked vastly different than you experienced it. We are continuing this conversation with Benjamin O'Brien. He studied liberal arts at Our Lady Seat of Wisdom College and obtained a Bachelor's of Arts in Humanities and Philosophy. He also served as a fireman in 2008 onwards, and he's the author of The Proving Grounds, a Catholic on Ladder 17, published by Ignatius Press. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
When women are faced with an unexpected pregnancy, Arbor Woman Health offers free medical-grade pregnancy tests, counseling, and same-day ultrasounds. But they can't protect the sacredness of life without your ongoing support. Join them for their 2025 Flourish Fundraiser Dinner on Friday, June 13th at 5:30 p.m. at St. John's Resort in Plymouth. Visit arborwoman.com to purchase tickets or become a corporate sponsor today.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
We'd all love to do more to spread the gospel, but where do you start? One simple way is through the Ministry of Hospitality. People need places to experience godly fun and fellowship. Let your home be that place. Make your home the welcoming place the neighborhood kids like to hang out. Be the family that organizes the annual block party. Invite people over once a month for a meal or game night or other activity where you can build relationships and spread a little joy. Evangelization is all about creating connection and letting people experience the difference God's grace makes in our lives. By letting people experience how God's love is lived out in your family, you're sharing the gospel in a subtle but powerful way. To discover more ways your family can celebrate the liturgy of domestic church life, check out the newest editions of Parenting with Grace and visit CatholicCounselors.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
The Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. Feeding 5,000 from a boy's 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, as recorded in John chapter 6, is quite a miracle. Yet the next day, Jesus downplays it in verse 27. Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. Likewise, God's provision of manna to the Israelites in the desert was also a great miracle, yet Jesus similarly downplays it in verse 49. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, but they died. This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die. Jesus is clearly stating that his Eucharist is greater than both of these amazing miracles, and the Catholic Church absolutely takes him at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is FaithForensics.org.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. We are speaking with Benjamin O'Brien, who is the author of The Proving Grounds, published by Ignatius Press. It's the memoir of a Catholic, a faithful Catholic, who served as a firefighter, and the culture of that environment that compels one to become a different kind of witness for the Catholic faith. Now, Benjamin, we were talking earlier about, like you said, your firehouse, or the firehouses that you served in, became microcosms. They became smaller expressions of what's going on in the culture at large. And I know that's a very big question, but I wonder if you can comment on that, not only because you were on the inside, but now as someone from the outside looking back in.
Yeah. Well, to your earlier point about how much society has changed, and you mentioned the 1950s, emergency services were very known for being a moral workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's kind of gone from that to the aftermath of the sexual revolution. And I think we have a hard time wrapping our heads around just how much society has changed in two short generations. So, you know, anywhere from, you know, guys looking at pornography on their phones, or the kind of immoral conversations that happen, or just, you know, cohabitating or supporting the LGBT agenda. All this stuff are symptoms of a society that has disengaged itself from its Christian roots. And that's certainly not a judgment on any individuals I worked with. You know, I worked with some very, very fine individuals of all faiths and backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the question becomes, as a Catholic who can sometimes feel like my values are so different from the culture at large, how does one be a light? How does one be a witness without coming across as being self-righteous, right? Or you don't want to be a snob. At the same time, you don't just want to go along to get along, because there can be a moral danger in sort of tacitly condoning a lot of these behaviors and attitudes. So one book I found very helpful was The Imitation of Christ by Thomas A. Kempis. And as I was reading this book, it made me realize just how wise the church is in directing us to, when we're being bullied or we're being looked down upon or ridiculed, to just count that as nothing and offer it up and offer up our sufferings in union with Christ.
Right.
And that was so freeing with me, because there had been this great tension. I had put so much pressure on myself to, you know, be that, Catholic ambassador.
Yes.
And so, you know, I felt like I had to be a perfect firefighter. And so when I made mistakes on the fire ground, or, you know, earned the ridicule of my crew for stupid mistakes, I thought, you know, Lord, what's going on? I'm supposed to be the all-round shining example here. But I think Thomas A. Kempis really helped me to be grounded and see that, you know what, it's not about worldly respect, and it's not even about worldly success.
Right.
As much as, yes, it's very important for firefighters to be competent. There's no doubt about that.
Yes.
But we're human, and when we make mistakes, you know, we have to check our pride at the door and just say, Lord, you know, I'm offering this up, and I hope that you can use me. Another thing that was very helpful was the Little Way of Thérèse of Lisieux.
Mm.
And that transformed the mundane and day-to-day tasks in the fire station for me. What had felt like drudgery, you know, cleaning bathrooms, mopping floors, shining the brass, checking equipment, all those chores that one does every day in a fire station, those were transformed because, like St. Therese, you can offer things up and you can have a daily sacrifice that, while it seems humble and hidden, can actually have great value in the eyes of God. And that can be a witness to your coworkers. Maybe I'll never see the fruit of it, but I think in some way it really changed how I approach my work. And firefighting is something that really requires you're doing the little things well so that the big outcomes are successful. So when I show up on a structure fire or to a cardiac arrest or a car accident involving entrapment, I prepare myself for that and for that successful outcome I hope for by paying attention to the little chores in the fire station, checking my equipment, being faithful to my monthly training, my weekly training. If I do all these small routines faithfully, the outcome and the big things are much more successful. And, right. and I think our Lord speaks about that when he says, if you're faithful in little things, you'll be faithful in big things. So these are all ways that you can, in a way, preach the gospel with your life without yeah. actually having to be preachy.
You know, I have to say, Benjamin, when I read your book, I actually appreciated that entry on Pirate and the dynamic you have with him. But the chapter that yeah. followed it, where you go from being a probie to being a full-fledged fireman, and the questions that your comrades asked your bride in the kitchen, and basically it ended with your bride telling you that you had earned their respect. I think in that subtle way, that's such a powerful witness for the rest of us, that excellence and virtue becomes itself a powerful beginning to the proclamation of the gospel.
Thank you. You know, I hadn't even considered that, but I think you uncovered a truth there.
I'd like to ask you, so as I read the chapter, it was very clear you didn't think you were making a dent or making much of a dent, but your work ethic alone apparently made a lasting impression on your brothers in the firehouse. So just tell us about that developing sense of respect that they eventually had for you.
Sure. Well, one of the things they told us in recruit class is that fire service reputations are not easy to build and very, very easy to tarnish. So it was a message to work hard. And so I took that to heart. I worked hard my first year. You know, every second I could, I was cleaning windows or checking equipment, you know, between calls. There's always things going on in a fire station, but, you know, more senior members can relax a little bit between calls. But the probie definitely has to keep busy the whole time because mm-hmm. you're building your reputation, right? And, you know, maybe I took that to an extreme, but they sat up and took notice for sure. I actually had one of my lieutenants said, one day he said, just stop. He's like, this is getting ridiculous. So, I took a break.
So, from there, as you develop, so now you're a full-fledged fireman. It's very clear you've earned the respect of people. And it's also very clear your bride holds you in high esteem, which is a tremendous testimony to your virtue as a husband and father as well. But from there, tell us about how your continued vocation as a fireman was expressed through your faith and vice versa.
Yeah, well, I think this is an understanding that I had to grow into over mm-hmm. the years. You know, sometimes it felt like my home life is where my faith could find expression and flourish, but my work life is where I have to keep it hidden. And I think that's the result of the unspoken and sometimes overt separation of church and state that we experience. So learning how to let my faith inform my firefighting was an ongoing learning curve. And so I think that learning to trust God as well as work hard was a big step for me. You know, self-reliance it's a deadly trap.
Yeah.
And we're told so often by the modern world that, you know, you're a self-made man, you know, you go out and be whatever you want to be. Maybe there's some truth to that, but as Catholics, we know that every good thing comes from God and we have to rely on him, on his strength and his wisdom too. Yeah. So once I developed a deeper life of prayer, I definitely noticed a difference, not just in station life, but also on calls, on the outcome. And I think that because grace builds on nature, there was a combination of things happening. Yes, I was growing my skill set as I gained seniority, but at the same time, I think I was opening myself up more to God's guidance, and that definitely helped.
And in fact, 3 years into the job, you had still conducted yourself in a kind of hold your faith secretly, hold your faith close to your chest, and eventually even your own comrades encourage you to be able to start talking about stuff. And I guess that's another way in which your the example of virtue becomes an exemplification of others wanting to find out about what makes you you. So tell us about that, the reconciliations that happened with some of the broken relationships you had.
Yeah, certainly. Well, there was the probably two main characters that I write about in my story that I had conflict with. And for one was to do with faith reasons, and the other was more to do with interpersonal reasons and job performance. And but you're absolutely right. In keeping my head down and my mouth shut, I think I didn't really allow them to get to know the real me. And when you're in a team dynamic, it's really important. And I think anyone who has worked in a team environment, whether that's on a sports team or in the military or as firefighters, you need to know who the person next to you is.
Right.
Because you need to know how they tick when lives are on the line and when seconds count. So, yeah, I felt like I went amiss in being too introverted, definitely my first couple of years. And my advice would be to any young firefighters that, yeah, definitely follow their advice and be judicious and keep your mouth shut a bit your first year because you don't want to be questioning authority. You don't want to come across as cocky. But when the time comes and it's time to come into your own a little bit, yeah, open up to your crew. And there may be a little bit of heat, there may be a little bit of joshing, but they would prefer that to you being sort of the quiet guy in the corner. Because firefighting is one of those professions where it attracts a lot of type A personalities, a lot of guys who really value people being forthright and standing for their opinion. So even if they might not agree with you, they'll probably want you to have a little spine and and stand up for yourself. So, those two guys in their own rough way, in their own challenging way, they helped me to grow as a person. They helped me to come out of my shell and be more forthright and be more direct about what I believe and what I stand for.
And you carried this to the different places that you were assigned. Benjamin, this was a real joy. This book is a real treasure. Thank you for penning this.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me on.
The joy is completely mine. My guest, Benjamin O'Brien, he's the author of The Proving Grounds, A Catholic on Ladder 17. It's a memoir, but it's a memoir that contains a tremendous amount of natural, prudential, and even faith lessons. So do procure it, published by Ignatius Press. Thank you for joining us. I'm August Peter.